I don't care about expensive things. Cashmere coats, diamond rings.
He's commanding, he's elegant, he's eloquent, he is dangerous, he has all these wonderful qualities to play on stage, supported by some of the best music that Kander and Ebb ever wrote, and certainly the best choreography that Bob Fosse ever put on a stage. And I get to work with 12 women in lingerie every night, so as you can see, I hate my life.
The outfits were amazing. How many Chicago shows have you appeared in?
Well, I've done this role. I've never been able to really adequately count, but between 1,000 and 1,500 times. I've donned the tuxedo. I look like the maitre d' at a steak restaurant, but and play Billy Flynn across the stage.
Have you made it your own?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had more of a chance to do this. You know, people say, well, you're playing the Richard Gere role. And I say, well, no, he actually only got to play it once. I've done it over 1,000 times. I think I understand it deeply, more deeply than he ever could. And it's a wonderful role for that respect. I say one prayer before I go on every night on stage, and I say, God, let me be surprised. And I am. That show surprises me every night, and I learn something new about the role, and the role just gets richer and richer and richer for me.
What surprised you last night?
Well, you wouldn't understand my perception or my perspective of the role, but there are little things. People say, you know, someone will say something to me during the show, and I go, oh, wow, that's never occurred to me before. Or I'll take time to listen to more to what I'm saying. There are certain things when I sing that I, you know, modify, and I go, oh, I haven't done that before. That's fun. Let me try that again. You know, it's like, so I'm constantly tweaking and tuning all the time.
Tell us a little bit about the lead roles that the ladies are playing, Roxy and Velma.
I think we're bringing to Buffalo probably the best production of Chicago that has ever been staged. Bianca Marroquin is an enormous star in Mexico and is just starting to spread her wings here in the United States as well. She is my Roxy on Broadway when I'm there. We just did the last 8-week run there in New York together. And I've got her back on the road with me now. She's my number one pick, and she's just phenomenal. I think she's the best that has ever done the role of Roxy. I say the same about Tara McLeod, who plays Velma. The legs go on forever, and her dancing ability is second to none.
For me, the favorite scene was the press conference. As a longtime reporter that's covered numerous press conferences through the years, it was great.
The ventriloquist number, you mean, yes. It's, I think, one of the most, it's called They Both Reach for the Gun, but it is where Billy sits Roxy down in his lap and treats her like a ventriloquist dummy and answers all the questions, and she mouths them. And if you look at what that actually represents, it is one of the most clever moments in Broadway history. That one song is just the imagination that it took to put that piece together, the lyrics, the music, the presentation of it. It's the perfect song for the perfect moment.
When you first rehearsed that, what was it like to just put all those pieces together and again get that precision?
It was very difficult, actually, yeah. There is the syncopation of the gun, they both reach for the gun, is actually my wife had to teach that to me. When I first picked up the role and I was learning it, I remember my wife driving up and down the street, and we had that in the car looping, and she was able to pick it up instantly, and I was going,
the rhythm wasn't there for
me. It wasn't there for me. The syncopation wasn't, didn't quite get, thank you, but I have a great wife.
So many hours put into...
Oh, yeah, so no, I spent a good month rehearsing this, both privately and then in New York before I opened on Broadway.
You, of course, are best known for Jay Peterman on Seinfeld. You probably can't live that down.
No, listen, I'm proud to be part of the Rumble line that's still very grateful to Jerry every time the residual checks show up at the door.
Did you ever expect such a smash hit from a sitcom?
You know, I never expected that I would be in such a smash hit, but I knew that this was a smash hit. Yeah, once we started doing it and they sold the syndication package, I knew that this was going to be one of the most unusual shows ever on television.
The creativity of those Peterman monologues were just terrific.
Elaine, you're out on your patootie. You know, he started off as just an eccentric cataloger, you know, and a man of the world. And he became more of a raving lunatic by the end of the show, by the end of the four seasons. And it was so much fun to play because it gave the writers a chance to write in long form rather than these kind of quick one-liners that, you know, most comedies are known for. I mean, very few shows could support the Peterman-style monologues and the absurdity of them, too.
What was your favorite Peterman scene, if you have one?
Well, I have my favorite was a monologue that was written in the Friars Club episode when Elaine and Rob Schneider, who was playing my hard-of-hearing assistant, and I thought that, mistakenly, that I thought that he and Elaine were having a little tête-à-tête on office time, and I tried to play Cupid and encourage the two of them. So I walk into her office one day, and I slap down two tickets to the Karamazov Brothers Circus, and I tell her that she and Bob can knock off a little early. And what followed is a monologue that was cut from the show. She looked at me as though I'd grown a second head, and she goes, "Bob?" And I said, "Elaine, don't worry. I, too, am no stranger to love on the clock. As a young lad, my father apprenticed me to a honey factory in Belize. The chief beekeeper was this horrible hag of a woman with gnarled teeth and a giant wart that she called a nose. Whew, she was not attractive, even by backwood standards. But love is truly blind, Elaine, and as the days went on, working closer and closer together, that sweet smell of honey in the air, I knew I had to have that horrible creature. And I did. So you and Bob have a good time tonight."
Fantastic. So there you've heard it, an uncut version of a Seinfeld episode, a piece that you've never heard before, right on WBFO.
That was gone. Yep. Fantastic. That was gone. Gone from the episode, but they added it in. I think they added it back into the DVD collection just because of the fun of it.
You, of course, have been on so many different things, Dancing with the Stars. You've hosted Family Feud, and you do animation. I guess you're on SpongeBob as well.
SpongeBob. Oh, I do many. I've got about 15 cartoons that I do. Actually, while I'm in Buffalo this week, I'll be recording a new one called Nickelodeon called Wally Kazam. It's a big, very popular show right now. I'm Victor the Villain on that show, so I'm recording while I'm here, but it'll be recorded back there.
What do you like about the animation side?
The animation is, you know what I love about it? Number one, I have an 8-year-old son, and I like to be able to put things that are within his grasp so that he understands what daddy does. And I do kids' shows. I do some of the Disney shows. I'll show up as a guest star every now and then. I do a lot of animation so that he has a nice, comfortable data from which to, you know, realize what daddy does for a living. And additionally, I enjoy it because, I can wear a pair of pajamas in. And I also love the style of it. Animation is about storytelling. So things are large and they're grand, and there really is no holes barred when you get there. It's just a lot of fun.
What about the game shows?
Love game shows. I really do because, you know, for me, hosting a game show is a little bit like having a cocktail party every night. And I realize that my job is to make everybody feel comfortable in the same way. You walk into a house and a guy greets you by the door and says, "Let me get you a drink in here. Come on over here and meet someone over here." And you know, that sense of, well, I'm being taken care of. And I think a good host has to have a paternal quality about them, to know that you're gonna delegate a half an hour of your life and it's going to be a good half hour. You're going to have fun and you're going to experience something, you know, learn something, who knows, but certainly have fun. And I think that's the purpose of, and that's why I enjoy doing it.
Will you do any more in the future?
I have one that they're putting together right now for me. Now, whether it gets to air, I don't know, but it's they're putting it together. And then I will tease it by saying it's the funniest thing I've ever done if it goes on.
Is this your first trip to Buffalo?
I think it is. You know, I travel so much and for so long, I lose track sometimes of the cities. I know I've been to Niagara there at the casino, and I think I did a show there once a while back.
Did you expect it to be this cold?
I expect everywhere to be this cold right now. Just everywhere I've gone in the country doesn't seem to be there doesn't seem to be anything close to double digits.
I know you're very busy with the show. You probably have little time to tour, but will you try to get around Buffalo at all? Have you?
Oh yeah, I'm trying. I'm going to try to get down to see the Frozen Falls there. That really is a spectacle. You know, it only happens every once in a while, but it's great.
Well, John O'Hurley, thank you so much for spending time here. We hope everyone gets out to see you in Chicago at Shays.
It's a great show. Please come.
Eyes of blue, softly saying,
I need you.
Let me see her standing there, and honest mister, I'm a millionaire. I don't care for any fine attire Vanderbilt might admire. No, no, not me. All I care about is love.
All he cares about is love.
Now maybe you think I'm talking about physical love, but I'm not. Not just physical love, there's other kinds of love, like love of justice, love of legal procedure.